Weekend Breakfast
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
It is. I'm trying to do the arithmetic. 22 minutes to go before we get to 7 o'clock. Good morning. Welcome back. You're listening to Gershwell Brooks in for Refilwe and Pakanyane on this Weekend Breakfast on this lovely Saturday morning. And, of course, we're coming to you live from none other than the Ugu Sports and Leisure Center here in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm really enjoying it thus far. And up next, we're going to have a very serious conversation with Dr. Fundile Nyati, and resident GP and CEO of Proactive Health Solutions. And we're going to be talking about Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Good morning to you, Dr. Nyati, and of course, a very serious issue, a very serious topic. Shocking statistic that I'm seeing here is that lung cancer is seemingly the leading cause of death, both in women and men, when it comes to cancer.
Indeed. Good morning, Gershwell, and good morning to all of your listeners. Yeah, you know, the lung cancer is really one of those cancers that you know, you just don't want to have it, you know, because when we look globally, at least 1.8 million people every year are losing their lives to lung cancer. And in South Africa specifically, it is the cancer that causes, you know, the most cancer deaths. So it's the number one, you know, cause of cancer death in South Africa. So it's a very, very serious cancer. Which is why it's really important that we spread information about it.
Indeed. I mean, the most obvious and basic question is, what is lung cancer?
Well, all right, just at a basic level, so you've got two organs on each side of your chest, spongy kind of organs called lungs. These are the organs where gas exchange takes place. That is, you inhale oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. Now, these are the organs that, you know, for people who smoke, you know, cigarettes, they are the ones that are most affected by, you know, that habit. And so when we talk lung cancer, then we're talking about a cancer that originates from the cells of the lungs, which is more often than not related to, you know, smoking habits, although it can actually happen even amongst people who are not exposed to smoking, whether primary or secondary type of smoking, or some people who, you know, based on the work that they do, they are exposed to things like asbestos. But really, when we talk lung cancer, we focus mainly on the cancer that is related to the smoking habit.
Mm-mm. I mean, how common is it, especially within the South African context? I mean, you gave us those statistics early on that every single year we lose 2 million people as a result of lung cancer, and 1.8 million people are newly diagnosed with lung cancer. I mean, those are quite high numbers.
Yeah. So just to correct it, so in terms of deaths globally, about 1.8 million deaths globally. In terms of new infections globally, it's 2.1 million people every year. Now, in the South African context, the exact numbers, you know, it's difficult, you know, to say. However, they talk about the lifetime risk. The lifetime risk of lung cancer amongst men in South Africa is like 1 in 82. You know, so 1 in 82 lifetime risk. And then for females, it's 1 in 182 for males and 1 in 191 for females. That's the lifetime risk. So that is really a big problem. And I think what is worrying most about this cancer is that in the early stages, there are no symptoms. You may not know that you've got this cancer. And so about two-thirds of people who get diagnosed with it, it's already spread beyond the lungs by the time it's discovered. And that's where the danger, you know, comes in, because you know, if two-thirds of the people are diagnosed when it has spread beyond the lungs, then treatment interventions normally are not so successful. That is the challenge.
But let's talk about that, because all too often when we do talk about cancer, and especially where cancer becomes, there's the risk of mortality where, it's now a case of severe illness survival hangs in the balance. Doctor, yeah. I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me. All too often it's as a result of, I wouldn't say late diagnosis, but it wasn't picked up early enough, right?
Yes.
And for people who are listening right now, whether people grew up in an area like I grew up, in an area where it was heavily polluted, as an example, or people who are smokers, the people who have been somehow involved with asbestos in their lifetimes. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of us grew up and lived in communities where we were in classrooms that were built out of asbestos. We had asbestos roofs and goodness knows. So the factors are multitudinous. What are the symptoms that people really need to start looking out for? And maybe even some of those early symptoms, some of the stuff that we might neglect and not really pay attention to.
Yeah. So, like I said, the majority of people do not experience any symptoms in the early stages, but they experience them when it's already, spread beyond the lung. But the signs and symptoms one can look for that could, be pointers that something is not right is when you have got a cough that just doesn't go away, a new cough that doesn't go away. So it's been like more than a month, you are coughing every day, and there's no flu, there's no common cold, you're not an asthmatic person, but you just got this cough. It just doesn't want to go away. Or you actually start coughing up blood, what we call hemoptysis, even small amounts of blood, that you cough up. You have shortness, of breath, chest pain, or your voice starts to become hoarse, and you cannot explain why that is happening. And that often is accompanied by a loss of weight that is unintentional. That is, you're not trying to lose weight, but you just lose weight. And in advanced cases, there may be pain in the bones, where it spreads quickly to the bones of the spine. So those are just some of the symptoms. But when you look at them, they are largely, affecting the lungs and the associated or nearby kind of organs. So those are the symptoms, but by the time you get these symptoms, it's often quite late.
And I guess that takes us to the next issue, Doctor, that I would like to explore with you is obviously how deadly ultimately lung cancer is. But before we get to that, I'm looking up at the time, 14 minutes to go before we get to 7 o'clock.
You're listening to The Weekend Breakfast on 702, live at the Ugu Sports and Leisure Center with the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Economic Development, Tourism and Environmental Affairs.
I mean, Doctor, based on what you just explained there, I mean, what I'm really, it's very interesting what you had highlighted. I mean, there are one or two symptoms that I guess one would be able to immediately identify, be concerned by, whether it be the persistent cough, whether it be coughing up blood. I guess what I'm getting at is that, if you have a cough for, say, a month and you just can't explain it, as you highlighted, you don't have a cold, you don't have a flu. Even if you had a cold or a flu, if you're coughing for a month, I mean, not even the most severe form of bronchitis leaves you with such a long-term cough, right? And also simultaneously, you have sort of a back pain, a spinal pain.
And
that's, again, you're losing weight suddenly. I mean, those are things that you're not going to necessarily immediately click and say, oh, this must be lung cancer. But I guess if you're coughing up blood, it's something that you would immediately you should be worried about. It's not sort of it's not a standard thing that happens to people. The point that I'm making, though, is I mean, what is the, once we get to that diagnosis of lung cancer, and I don't want to scare people, but what is your survival rate? What is your survival chances ultimately?
In terms of literature, the research that's done throughout the world, one thing that is very clear that lung cancer is one of the most deadly cancers that you can ever find. We talk of a 5-year survival rate from the time people are diagnosed with this cancer. And the 5-year survival rate amongst lung patients is amongst the lowest. Whilst other cancers, you know, with the interventions, you know, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery, we can actually find a way, you know, to improve and prolong their lives. But this particular cancer, very, very few people are alive 5 years after the diagnosis. My experience with my patients is that within 12 to 36 months from diagnosis, you know, the people often succumb to the disease.
Mm. I mean, that's severe, and that's actually quite tragic. I mean, and then we can maybe get back to treatment and that type of thing. But we have the new advent of e-cigarettes, you know, vaping. And I guess it started off as an alternative. I've heard and seen some scary sort of stories coming, especially out of the US, and I guess there's greater reportage around these things where people had sudden death onset as a result of vaping, etc. Is vaping comparable to smoking? Because obviously, from the onset, from the beginning of our conversation, Doctor, you said, listen, this is a cancer that's associated with smoking. And vaping? Where does vaping sort of fit into the grander scheme of things? What I'm asking more directly is, can vaping cause lung cancer?
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, in 2007, that's when we started seeing the introduction of these e-cigarettes or e-liquids, which lead to what we call vaping, which sometimes gives an impression that now this thing is harmless, you know, because it's vapor, and vapor generally, you know, doesn't really cause problems. But anyway, if we compare cigarettes to vaping, one thing that I would say is an advantage when it comes to vaping is that there's over 4,000 different chemicals that are carcinogens, that is cancer-causing chemicals that you'll find in a cigarette. The number of chemicals that you find in the vaping, you know, liquid, you know, isn't as much. But what you do get is a high concentration of nicotine. But there are some chemicals there as well. So when we look at the risk of lung cancer, you know, vaping still does cause lung cancer. You know, its potential to cause cancer is lower than with cigarettes. Having said that, I'm not saying that then people must go and vape, because there are problems that are actually linked with vaping. And because it's still early days, I mean, since 2007, we have not, you know, followed enough people to look at all the complications that come with vaping. But what is worrying with vaping is that as much as it was introduced as a smoke cessation type of intervention, nowadays it's actually now directed at the young, you know, young kids, teenagers, adolescents, as a gateway to smoking, because the amount of nicotine that is in those, you know, devices that they deliver to the lungs, it creates addiction to these ones, to the young ones especially, and they come with a lot of flavors. They come with a lot of nice marketing, and it's put as if it's a very safe thing. Yet evidence that's coming up is that actually it does contribute to cancer as well, but maybe not to the same extent as cigarettes.
But, Doctor, that then immediately takes me to something that's very popular, especially at this time of the year, you know, the hubbly bubbly, the hookah. We see young, and let's be quite frank, we see younger and younger kids sitting around the hubbly bubbly / hookah, having fun with it, you know, blowing huge volumes of vapor into the air, and people will tell you, no, it gets filtered by the, I heard this many, many years ago when we discovered this hubbly bubbly. that no, it gets, you know, all the tar and everything else gets filtered through the water, and therefore it's no pollutants that go into the lungs, and it's so much safer, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, many years later, and I guess with the benefit of hindsight, I mean, I know that it's quite frankly BS that we were told by our peers all too often.
Yeah, well, definitely, you know, vaping, you know, and the hookah or the bubbly, same, you know, kind of situation. People think that, no, I'm just inhaling vapor, nothing's going to happen to me. But it's actually not vapor, it's what you call aerosols that are coming out of there. And those aerosols, you know, they actually contain some of the chemicals that are actually damaging, especially to those cells that are responsible for gas exchange in the lungs. And these are very, very popular, you know, amongst the adolescents and the young adults. You know, if you go to some of the popular night spots, you will always find young people, you know, around these bubbles, bubblies. And, you know, it's really, really a problem. And like I said, the way these things are marketed are such that they are sold as things that are not presenting any health.
It is aimed for the youth.
The reality, though, is that they are actually delivering chemicals to the lungs that are actually causing long-term damage. And obviously, for those who are even asthmatic, then these actually worsen the situation, because then some of these are irritants to the lining of the lungs, which can actually worsen those conditions like asthma. So, but the problem then is that we are not, you know, communicating a lot about these associated dangers, and, you know, young, impressionable adolescents and teenagers, and young people in general, they are, you know, picking up these habits, thinking that there are alternatives that are healthy to cigarette smoking. Yet, what they are gateways to smoking, you know, because they are now hooked, and later on, actually, beyond just smoking, you know, dacha is also then put in some of these, you know, chemicals. Mm-hmm. And what you spoke about in the U.S., are actually the e-vaping, you know, liquid that were tempered with, and they put a bit of, you know, cannabis within that, and it caused a certain type of a complication that caused death amongst the vapors, you know, in that part of the world. In South Africa, we don't have this death as yet, but in the continent of Africa, we are now the number one country when it comes to the vaping, and the, you know, the use of this is increasing exponentially, you know, in this country. And so we are actually in the top 10 countries in the world when it comes to the adoption of vaping. And it's predicted that, you know, in the next, you know, in the next 5-10 years, we will be seeing, you know, quite a big percentage already amongst the, you know, grade 12 students. That is done in Cape Town, are showing that at least about 25% of students, you know, who are doing matric, have actually had, you know, vaping, you know, as a habit.
It's very worrisome, Doctor. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other things that I wish I could have covered with you, but we are pressed for time. I mean, one of the key things is obviously, how do you go about diagnosis? I mean, just very briefly, in under a minute, would you be able to tell me, how does one go about diagnosing lung cancer?
Well, like I said, it's very, very difficult, because the symptoms and signs, they present, you know, very, very late. But, you know, if you've got respiratory symptoms, we'll always start with a chest x-ray. You know, it may or may not show anything. And then depending on what is found in the chest x-ray, then we may proceed to other tests, like, you know, a bronchoscopy, where we put a camera into the lungs, or even do what you call low-dose CT scan, because that is much more useful in actually identifying cancer. So when we are suspecting that somebody might have lung cancer, you know, x-ray, we take the sputum, if there is any, to the lab, and the low dose, you know, computerized tomography, which is a CT scan of the lung. Those are the things that we use. But in settings where there is, you know, like in the rural part of our country, not everybody has got access to some of those tests. So it's a challenge, and it's not something that should be. So we should actually be focusing more on prevention rather than, you know, the reaction to them.
Doc, wonderful point to end it on. Thank you so much, Dr. Fundile Nyati.